live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist.
Around the world, the trip begins with a kiss. Roam if you want to, roam around the world.
Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. Of course, we've been living on airplanes. What a surprise. I've not been on the ground for more than a day in a row without being on a plane. I'm sort of like living on airline food, which is really dangerous, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Get out your maps, boys and girls. We are at 29 degrees, 59 minutes north, 90 degrees, 15 minutes west. We are coming to you from New Orleans, Louisiana, and specifically the National World War II Museum, an amazing place that I visit every time I'm here. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem, and we'll answer it and solve it right here on the air. Speaking of a problem, listen to this figure. The typical two-bag traveler is paying an average of 54% more in hidden fees these days. You are getting nickeled and dimed for everything short of breathing on an airplane. And the recent hearings in Congress about all of these, quote, ancillary fees or ancillary revenue, consider this. In the first quarter of this year alone, the airlines earned more than $1.2 billion in ancillary fees, of which $769 million, so nearly three-quarters of $1 billion, was earned from what? Charging you to check your bags. And, you know, in my book, there are only two kinds of airline bags, carry-on and lost. So why would you pay the airline to lose your bag? And if they do lose your bag or they delay your bag, what's your recourse? Do you get a refund? You know what the airlines say? No. Of course they're going to say no. They're trying to generate revenue anywhere they can. And at the hearings in front of Congress, it's gone beyond that, of course, because there are pillow fees and blanket fees. And you know what? They should charge a hazmat fee if you're going to touch the blanket. That's what they should really charge you for. Have you seen those blankets? You couldn't pay me to touch those blankets, and yet they want you to pay you to take one. Even those blankets that show up wrapped in plastic, you know what? I'm going to start a new show just for that on television called CSI Airplane. Let's test those. Yeesh, that's a crime. But the biggest crime of all, our friends at Spirit Airways or Spirit Airlines, their CEO actually testified. Remember, these are the guys who in less than 2 weeks are going to start charging you up to $45 for a carry-on bag. The CEO, Ben Baldanza, he's not found the charge he hasn't liked, actually testified that bringing luggage on vacation was, quote, not essential to travel. So obviously Ben Baldanza is in the witness relocation program because he doesn't need any baggage. Obviously Ben Baldanza is flying homeless. I'm sorry, Ben, you've gone too far. And we're going to see what happens. Remember what I've always said, the one job I do not want and would not take on August 1st is gate agent for Spirit Air, because I will get punched out when I try to tell people I'm going to charge them $45 for the carry-on bag. Spirit Airlines will have a new code after August 1. It's called 911. Anyway, so much for that. I told you we were coming from the National World War II Museum, which is a great place to visit. In fact, it's more than one building, and I just can't get enough of it. And joining me now, who is from the museum and instrumental in all of their exhibits, Bob Farnsworth. Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I mean, the last time I was here, the building we were in wasn't here. And
no.
The last time I was
no.
here, we were across the street. And so many different displays, so many different things to look at. Why New Orleans? And I have to ask that question, right?
Yeah, that's the question everyone asks.
Yeah.
And why New Orleans? Because Stephen Ambrose, the one of the most prolific and noted authors on World War II, is from New Orleans and lived most of his life here. And in a conversation that he had with President Eisenhower when he was discussing the opportunity to do his autobiography, Eisenhower said, "Well, you're from New Orleans. Do you know Andrew Higgins?" And he said, well, no, Mr. President, I don't. He said, well, that's too bad, because that's the man that won the war. And he talked about how important those Higgins boats were in the D-Days, and how they allowed...
Those Higgins boats were the LSTs, weren't they?
That allowed our side to put all of those men and equipment on the beaches.
In Normandy.
In Normandy.
Although I will tell you something, Bob. I learned a very important lesson from watching that movie, Saving Private Ryan. And I basically have embraced that lesson in everything I've ever done for the rest of my life. It was the overriding lesson of that movie. Not a good idea to be in the first wave.
No.
Not a good idea.
Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah.
Tough duty, no question.
So ask me if I bought the first iPhone. No.
No.
Or the first hybrid. No.
That's learning from history.
It is. But when you decided to do this museum here, I mean, how much support did you get? Did people just jump all over it?
Well, it started out as with a mission to build a museum to honor the brave men and women, took part in the D-Days in both the European theater and the Pacific theater, and the original museum is dedicated to that, and the exhibits are wholly about those experiences. And in 2003. Congress designated this museum as America's National World War II Museum and expanded our mission. And thus, in November, we added this 70,000 square foot addition and these three wonderful new venues to the experience.
And by the way, you mentioned the Higgins boat. You've got a Higgins boat.
We do.
And if you don't know what one looks like, I don't care how many movies you've seen, you need to go look at it up close and personal to understand, yes, it won the war, but boy, it was not exactly flying first class.
You're not going to feel that you were very safe as you approached the beach, I can assure
that,
you.
When that front flap opened down, man, you were a sitting duck.
Right.
Unbelievable.
And the only metal was in the front. You had wood on the side, so that wasn't going to stop anything.
What's the biggest surprise in this museum?
Gee, the biggest surprise? I think it's watching, and maybe it's not a surprise, but it's watching World War II veterans experience and go through the museum and invariably...
And bringing their grandkids.
And bringing their grandkids.
Or their great-grandkids.
Exactly. And as they come out, on more than one occasion, I've had World War II veterans hug me and say, thank you, when we're doing this to thank them and to honor them.
Because they're finally getting their story told.
They are. And it's very important. And as you know, we have less than 2 million left from World War II and losing almost 1,000 a day.
I was on a flight recently going from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., and an elderly gentleman came on the plane with his daughter and then his granddaughter, and they sat behind me. And someone came on the plane and wanted the cockpit and talked to the captain, and next thing you know, the captain would not take off the plane until we all stood up and applauded the Medal of Honor winner from World War II.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was like, and then I got his story. Oh my God, what a story. And his story is in your museum, by the way.
And that type of thing happens here over and over again. I mean, it's a very emotional experience going through our exhibits.
Bob Farnsworth from the National World War II Museum, great work. I've got to see the new museum part because I only saw the old one, so I'm coming to see the new one.
We're excited about having you talk about it and see it.
You got it, man. When we come back, our good pal Scott McCartney from the Wall Street Journal on what happened in Congress this week and who's getting fined and who isn't. This should be fun. Back with more from the National World War II Museum right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
GoRVing.com. With new RVs starting at just $5,000, years of great vacations just got more affordable and convenient. To get started on your road trip dream, visit GoRVing.com. Go affordably. Go RVing.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And one housekeeping note, I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for one important reason, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential good work in Haiti and Chile and Western China because of the earthquakes there, and of course all the work that's being done now in the Gulf. A lot of different ways that you can get actively, physically, intelligently involved and bring something really important to the party, otherwise known as you. My next guest, a regular on the show, you read him all the time in the Wall Street Journal. He's the travel editor to the Wall Street Journal, our good pal, Scott McCartney. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Peter.
So listen, let me just bring you up to date on this. I got to get your opinion on this because I've been yelling and screaming about it for the whole show. Okay. The famous quote from Ben Baldanza at Spirit Air saying that luggage is not essential for vacation.
Well, it's not essential as long as you pay Ben for it. I heard Dave Cush say he's known Ben a long time. Back to his days in Continental. Ben used an analogy about ordering shirts from Land's End and how they were pricing tickets at Continental and the kind of technology they wanted to be able to use. And now I wonder if he's packing that shirt. But I think the name of this game is. Ben really wants to get attention for Spirit, and it's working.
He's getting it. Oh my God! Because guys like you and I are talking about it.
Well, that's right, and it's really not that different from Michael O'Leary saying he's going to sell standing room only tickets, when knowing full well that he can't do that. But people do stories about it, and it drives home the impression that Spirit Airlines or Ryanair or whatever you're talking about. Is the absolute lowest airline. Southwest Airlines has done the same thing for years. You want a cheap ticket, you think of Southwest. They may not be the cheapest ticket, but at least you have that impression.
In fact, if you do a fare-by-fare comparison and city-by-city comparison where Southwest Airlines competes against the legacy carriers, what you're going to find in about 70% of the cases is that their fares are as much as the legacy carriers or even more.
Yeah, that's right. But they have been very successful at driving home the impression that Southwest offers cheap fares.
Because of the checked baggage thing too.
Right. And I think they're making good headway, picking up market share, with this notion of they don't charge fees, and there's something to be said for that. Ben's going the other way. we charge fees for everything, so. We'll sell you a $10 ticket, but you better bring your wallet when you travel, and there's probably a wallet fee, too.
I'm going to make you a bet, Scott, and you won't take this bet, that within the next 3 weeks, Ben Baldanza will announce that Spirit Air is going to announce a landing fee.
Yeah, that could be. They already have a fee to actually buy a ticket, and that's the one that's always struck me as, bizarre. And unless you go to the third counter down from the end on a Tuesday, you pay a fee to actually buy a ticket. What they do is sell tickets, but now you have to pay a fee on a fee.
All right, now let's shift gears for a second. I want to talk to you about what we call the famous strategic alliances, the One Worlds, the Star, the Sky Team.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Boyd, who's another regular on our show, we were having a discussion on the air one day, and Mike said recently, he said, within 5 years, you won't be flying an airline, you'll be flying an alliance.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. And from a traveler's point of view, the alliance is really becoming the more important criteria. You get a lot of your benefits when you fly through the alliance. And a lot of savvy travelers have figured out that, what airline you fly doesn't really matter. It's what alliance you can redeem your miles in, what alliance you have elite status in. And there are lots of ways to work the alliances. I think the alliances themselves are not quite there yet. But I think Mike may be right that eventually, as they do get more seamless, as they incorporate a lot of their policies, that it will be indistinguishable whether you're on United or Lufthansa.
Well, what's interesting to me is that, you talk about frequent flyer points with the alliances. Both American and British are in the One World Alliance, but if you fly British Airways from New York to London, you won't get American miles. Any time that you fly an airline that's competing with an airline in the same alliance on the same route, they don't give you the miles.
Well, the American-British Air thing is about to go away.
The EU just gave them a deal, I know.
The EU gave them a deal. The U.S. government has already tentatively approved it, I think. Any day the U.S. government will issue final approval. They'll have antitrust immunity. They'll be able to offer miles on each other's flights. But you know, even then, there are gotchas in that. If you're not paying a high enough fare, some international airlines don't award miles for that, and the U.S. airlines have followed that. So, it happened to me recently. I got caught. I was on an Air France flight. I didn't get my Delta miles for it. I inquired why. Well, the fare was too cheap, and even though if I had been on a Delta ticket, I would have gotten miles for it because I was on an Air France ticket. I wasn't awarded miles.
Oh, bitch, Sal McCartney.
Yeah.
You
just
are such
like
a whiner. Of course. But, you know, if we compare the alliances, it's interesting because Oneworld is getting a lot of attention lately. They only have 11 airlines in that alliance, whereas SkyTeam's got 13 and the Star Alliance has 28.
Yeah, Star Alliance has, they were the first alliance. They got a significant advantage from being early. They also, in the U.S., they're the only alliance with multiple U.S. airlines, and I think that's a huge advantage as well. So in terms of worldwide reach, using your miles on different airlines, even some of their, they have more liberal policies on upgrades and things like that. Star Alliance has set the standard for the other two to chase.
So where do you think this is going to end up, that there will come a time when I literally, as Mike Boyd says, I go out to the airline and I board the alliance?
Well, I think, you on some planes, you already board a Star Alliance plane or a Oneworld plane, just in terms of the paint job.
Sure.
And I think it'll go more and more that way. If the ownership rules were relaxed in the United States, for example, you might see a United or an American owned by or Delta owned by a foreign airline, and they might do it under the Alliance banner rather than having Air France fly you between Atlanta and Memphis.
Which brings up a story that you did recently on one of the lone remaining single operating carriers, U.S. Air, who tried to merge with everybody except you and me.
Yeah. Yes, poor U.S. Air. They are, if it's a game of musical chairs, they're the ones left standing.
And what does that mean?
Well, I think they'll find a way. They may end up with another airline, but as the world condenses, and we've seen that throughout history with the airline industry, there are airlines that are the odd man out, and they're going to have to find a partner because I just don't think they have the clout or the cachet to go it alone.
And yet their CEO, Doug Parker, keeps on saying they can.
Well, yeah, but he's also the CEO that's tried so hard. Doug Parker tried to buy Delta. He tried to get United to buy U.S. Airways. He has pushed very hard for a deal, and then when he doesn't get a deal, he says, well, we don't need a deal. But if they didn't need a deal, I don't think he would be pushing in the first place.
So I think what we ought to do is you should quit your job. I should quit my job. We should start an airline called Odd Man Out.
Peter, I don't think we have enough money to lose to actually start an airline.
That's the famous Richard Branson quote. If you want to be a millionaire, you start with $1 billion and open an airline, and you will become a millionaire.
That's exactly right.
And that's not getting any better. You know, I had a conversation the other night with the head of marketing for an airline that has gotten remarkably little publicity, but they've got quite an interesting route network, and that's called Allegiant.
Mm-hmm.
And they're flying to places that you and I don't normally land at, like Rockford, Illinois, and Plattsburgh, New York, and Elmira, New York. There's an international airport for you, and yet they seem to be doing okay.
Yeah, they really do. It's long been known that if you can start up an airline and fly without attracting the attention or the wrath of the big airlines, you can probably do okay. And Allegiant has done that, and they found a model. We always think, oh my gosh, frequency is everything in the airline business. You have to fly 20 times between L.A. and New York and things like that. Well, if you're going to Elmira, New York, once a week, twice a week, that's enough. And that works for them.
Unbelievable. We're going to watch Allegiant because it's a very, very interesting route network. I want to talk to you about that next time. Scott McCartney from The Wall Street Journal. Of course, you read him every week in The Wall Street Journal. And his book, The Wall Street Journal Guide to Power Travel, is an essential must-have book. We'll be back with more right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And you know, if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. My next guest I've known for a long time, since his days at another airline, American Airlines. He's now the CEO and president of Virgin America. And the reason why he's on the show is because it was just voted number one in Travel and Leisure's World's Best Awards. Are you excited, David? David Cush.
Hi, Peter. Good to talk to you again. We're very excited, not only because we love winning awards, but we love winning awards 3 years in a row. So it was a great announcement for us, and we're excited not only for us, our guests, but also for all of our teammates in the company.
All right, so you're gloating. It's okay.
You know me.
I do know you. You know, when you guys started, it was a little touch and go because of foreign ownership rules and you know, basing yourselves in San Francisco, which I always thought was interesting because of weather issues at that airport, but you've managed to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had to get through the ownership issues, and, you know, I think that was a huge distraction and certainly a big expense for us. But I think I've found over the times, you know, the San Francisco decision was made before I was here, but that actually was one of the better decisions that was made in the inception of the company. You know, it's a creative place. It's a place where there are no boundaries, and we brought a lot of new thinking to the airline industry because of it.
You know, there's when people say to me, what are the touch points that will get you to fly an airline? The traditional thinking, of course, would be frequency of flights. It would be routes or the frequent flyer program. I think times have changed. The thing that gets me to fly your airline is everybody gets Wi-Fi.
Well, that's a big part of it, you know, and the electronic platform we have is unrivaled. It's not only Wi-Fi, but it's, you know, kind of standard outlets underneath each seat. It's live TV. It's really the whole package. But on top of that, you know, you've got food and drink on demand, ordered from a touch screen. It's really a lot of innovative things. And then, of course, we think we have the nicest people in the air, too.
Oh, stop. Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you something. We had one of our contributors, Wendy Walsh, who's a psychologist and a regular on our show, fly with you guys from Los Angeles to New York and report on her trip. And her biggest report, you'll love this, David, was that at least 12 people on the plane hit on her via her touchscreen on her at her seat back.
Well, it sounds like I need to meet her.
I can arrange that, David. I can make that happen for you. But I mean, she was amazed at all the different conversations. She was, you know, multitasking at 35,000 feet, just talking to everybody on the plane.
Yeah, it really is a different environment. You get up there and you've got, you know, the Wi-Fi, so you can communicate with people down on the ground, but also the seat-to-seat chat, and it really makes the time go by fast, and you meet a lot of new people and maybe make some business connections also.
I mean, when Richard Branson gave me a tour of the plane and showed me that, I basically said on the air, oh, that's the stalker button.
Well, the next thing we have coming out on that, Peter, is that we've got the ability to actually send a drink to someone else sitting in a different seat. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, look what you have started now. Oh, my God. I love that. But what you should really do is send a drink to somebody else and say it's from a secret admirer and let them figure out what seat it's in. That's how you do it.
That will certainly have people in the aisles.
I know. Just what you needed. I know. Let's talk about routes. You just started a route from California to Toronto, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, we started flying from both Los Angeles and San Francisco into Toronto. And, you know, it was a landmark route for us. It's our first international route, which has some additional complexities, which we had to deal with. But the main thing is there's obviously a tremendous entertainment route from Los Angeles and a tech and finance route from San Francisco. So in the end, probably the thing that was most remarkable about it is you can't see an ocean from it because everything else we've done has been pretty much transcon on the ocean on one side or the other.
Wow. And you're still flying the same equipment. I mean, you only have one type of plane, correct?
Yeah, we're A319s and A320s, so we're single fleet type. And that's really a big part of what our business strategy is from a cost and operating standpoint, we want to hold up what the low-cost carriers like Southwest and others have done. We want a single fleet type. We want all of the productivity and the efficiencies that those guys have. From the revenue side, though, we're a little bit different. We have a higher quality product. We've also are going after the corporate customers and have better distribution. So what I would say is from the operating and cost side, we're trying to be a low-cost carrier. From the revenue side, we want to emulate what the legacies have done.
So basically, if you want to emulate what the legacies have done, you want to charge me for everything?
Not for everything, but we want to get a fair price.
You know what I'm saying. I get crazed now. And what's your take? I'm going to put you on the spot here quickly. What's your take on our friend Mr. Baldanza from Spirit Air saying luggage is not essential to travel?
Well, it is for me. This is the first thing I'll say. And I've known Ben for many years, you know, from our times at American. And I think Ben has a very interesting model down there that he's really stripped down the business model in terms of saying, here's your base fare, and then I'm going to charge you for everything else on top of it. And it's not dissimilar to what you've seen on EasyJet and other carriers. So different than what we're doing, but, you know, Ben's a smart guy, and we'll see if it works.
You got it. David Cush, the CEO and president of Virgin America. Back with more right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. Here's the question that I can't always get my arms around, and that is, first of all, people always ask me, you know, where do you vacation, or how do you vacation, or do you ever vacation? And if you do, do you vacation well? Can you actually unplug? And I'm one of those type A guys who will say to you, here's my idea of a great vacation. Put me on an island in Fiji with internet access where I get to go online at least an hour a day. That's all I ask. I want the option of staying connected. Some people would say, no, you have to be totally unplugged. If I was totally unplugged, I would become a barricaded suspect. I would actually have to take hostages. My next guest knows a little bit about that. She's the senior editor of Whole Living Magazine and knows all about the unplugged vacation. Our good friend, Terry Trespicio. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
All right. So are you a BlackBerry fanatic or can you actually unplug?
I
want to know the truth.
I am. And you know what? Someone would think, because I work at Whole Living, that the whole idea is you should completely unplug on vacation. But you know what? I'm not going to lie. I have a hard time putting down my BlackBerry as well. But I think the key is making the decision. And you just said it, 1 hour a day when you're in Fiji. If that works for you, fine. Without it, you might go crazy, as you said.
I mean, the true definition of great luxury vacation is keeping your options, and one of those is keeping your option to be connected.
Yep. I think that, and I know that some people would say, well, that's too bad that you can't completely unplug, but I think the first thing you have to do is decide before, because if you say, well, I'm going to totally not be available, and then you do check your email, then you feel guilty. But if you say to your cohorts, I'll be on, don't worry, I'll check, and then they expect you to check, and you're not available, then resentment can build up on both sides.
Okay, well, I'll give you another scenario, and that is somebody who says, I'm planning a vacation and they plan it 3 months in advance and a week before they say, oh, I'm too busy, I can't go. And they always don't go. They always find a work excuse
really?
For not going.
I can't imagine giving up on a vacation, but I have heard of people who have a vacation booked and then their boss, who is not aware of their vacation plans every second, starts to plan things where they'll need that person and they start to feel guilty. They're afraid to say, no, I'm away at that time. They assume, I guess I can't go if I want to keep my job. Not true. You got to book that vacation in advance, make sure your superiors and your coworkers know that you're going to be away and defend that time and don't be afraid of defending it. It's part of the benefit of being an employee.
Wait, there are benefits of being an employee? I didn't know that. Let me write that down. Really?
Oh, yes. Wow. You do have vacation time. You have earned it. You just want to make sure that you defend it. If someone starts booking up your time with meetings, you say, you know what? Can we pick another time? I'll be away at that time. Don't start compromising and saying, but I guess I could call in. that you will start to resent it, and then you really don't get the break. But it's hard for people to shift focus.
No, it is. You know why? Because I'm a firm believer, not because I like to believe it, but because I actually think it's true, that people do not change their lifestyle when they change their location. They can't help themselves.
You're not going to be a different person just because you're on vacation. You're going to be laying there in a hammock as nervous as you would be if you were at your desk, especially if you have that thing in your hand all the time. You should not be checking your BlackBerry when you're on It's a Small World with your family, because that sends a message to them, too, that they are not as important. So you really do have to limit it, but it doesn't mean you can't check. But, Peter,
okay,
your life is traveling, so I imagine you cannot be unplugged really ever.
Not
unfortunately,
really,
you're the man who travels with no vacation.
That's right, but everybody thinks I'm on vacation. That's the really that's the biggest problem. They all think I'm on a beach with a piña colada stuck up my nose, and I'm not there. Trust me, I'm not. But here's
you're
one for you.
You're probably the most unlucky person.
No, I'm not. I wouldn't trade my job for anything because I love my job. But here's the thing. Here's what I hate. When you go to a resort and the people who design the room where you're staying, that guest room, who think that you have to have mood lighting... You know what? Anybody who traps me with a 40-watt bulb puts me with mood lighting, puts me in a very bad mood. You know why? Because I want to have the option of being able to read in my bed. I would like to be able to see what's in the room.
Or find my socks and underwear suitcase. It would be very helpful. Or not be wearing things that don't match. I don't understand that, actually. I want the option to make it dim if I want, but bright enough to work if I want.
Do you know what I now travel with on certain locations? I'm not kidding you. A light bulb.
Don't tell me you unscrew light bulbs in a hotel room.
Oh, are you kidding? You get there with those little 30-watt fluorescent bulbs and you can't even see anything? You better believe I do.
The restrictions on stuff we can carry, you're carrying a breakable glass object?
Oh, I pack it very carefully.
That is something I did not think of. But what about when you come back from vacation? That's the key, too. That's the hardest part. Do you do anything for yourself to ease the reentry?
Yes, I drink heavily. I'm kidding.
That's going to make it hard. One little thing you might want to do is... And this is sort of, I don't know anyone who does this yet, but I'm thinking of doing it, is prepare a little something for yourself that will be waiting for you on your desk when you get back. Maybe it's something you've wanted to order, you want to have come for you. So when you come home, there's something to look forward to, a little something, because that can be rough coming back.
You know what? I'm going to take that to heart. I love it. Terry Trespicio, the senior editor of Whole Living Magazine, who's got me drinking heavily now on my return. Terry, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate
that. Thank you.
And when we come back, speaking of drinking heavily... We got the chef of Commander's Palace, and he's brought stuff. I'm getting very, very scared. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. And when you come to New Orleans, and I do this every time I come, I know, call me a creature of habit. I end up at this restaurant. And for two reasons. One, because I like eating at the restaurant. And two, because you go right across the street and visit all the cemeteries. But that's a whole other story. Of course, that restaurant is called Commander's Palace. And the chef's with me right now, Tori McPhail. Hey, Tori.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
And you brought stuff.
Yeah, we got great stuff today.
Okay, now what's in this cup?
Well, this is a cracked coconut cocktail that we just made up this afternoon. We load this with tons of New Orleans rum, fresh ginger, a little bit of lime juice, and cilantro. We shake that up and then pour it over ice.
It's called. Does it have a name?
We actually just kind of made it up this afternoon.
Oh,
so there you go.
Fine. You see? Okay, here we go. Ooh, that's good. You know why it's good? Because you know it's lethal, but you can't taste it.
It's fresh, and it's great on a hot summer afternoon.
And this is a hot summer afternoon.
Yeah, that's it. You never know what you're going to find on the Commander's menu, whether it's fresh cocktails or great seafood like we got
today. And yet you've got certain staples that never leave that menu, right?
Yeah,
you have signature dishes. I mean, there are certain restaurants that I know and you know that if they ever took a signature dish off that restaurant, you wouldn't go back there.
Yeah.
So what's yours?
Well, we've got a couple. Commander's Palace turtle soup has been a perennial favorite, and people come from all over the world just to sit down and have that soup. And it takes us 3 days to make every batch. True story.
How do you do it in 3 days?
Very
slowly. I know. Don't say
Two and a half days to catch the turtles and then make the soup finally. But to be honest with you, we've got all the best fresh product in the city of New Orleans, tons of garlic, onions, fresh turtle meat right here from Louisiana. And we always start with a good roux, tons of Louisiana hot sauce. It's just one of those great, great soups that really speaks to you.
Now, true New Orleans food doesn't always have to be hot, does it?
No, that's right. More Cajun food really has more to do with a smoky, salty, kind of a spicy thing. And then 250 years ago, when this land was settled by the French and Spanish, it was out of necessity. Okay, the Creole food came after, and it's really more of a French-influenced, refined type of a flavor. And so you've got great, big, bold spice, but it's not overwhelming like some of the Cajun food.
What is this drink again? What is this again?
It's like a cracked coconut cocktail. You just never know what fresh ingredients you're going to find on our menu from day to day.
And you see now, two more of these, and I don't care what's on the menu.
It's a good thing it's already after five, huh?
All right, so you got the turtle. You got the turtle soup.
Yeah, bread pudding souffle is always a good one.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So it's
that's a weapon. You know that.
Everybody loves bread pudding, right?
Yeah.
All right, so the interesting thing for the... For probably the 100th anniversary, Paul Perdome, when he was the chef at Commander's Palace, decided to
do
something.
And people forget Paul was a chef there.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what put Commander's Palace on the map. And he decided to take a great Louisiana dessert like bread pudding and turn it into a nice, light, fluffy, French-inspired souffle. And we finished that even today, tableside, with a really good stout whiskey cream. It's fantastic.
So basically, if it's not blackened, you're shooting liquor into it like you can't believe.
Well, that's kind of the scoop. I mean, we're in New Orleans, right? Come on. It's Creole.
What's the most surprising dish on your menu?
Whatever's going on that day. We change basically all the menus every day, twice a day, depending on what I can get from the local fish guys, local farmers market. And that's kind of been the hallmark for us, too.
Well, let's talk about local fish and talk about what's going on in the Gulf. I mean, have you had trouble getting deliveries?
Well, we're still getting the same varieties, but it's just getting tougher as the days go on. We've been using the same fishermen and the fish houses for decades now, and those guys really take care of us. But really, it's a day-to-day and hour-by-hour situation. You know, you watch the national news and it's all doom and gloom. But the reality is down here in New Orleans, man, we've got all the best seafood that we could possibly want. And there's five government agencies testing and taking samples every single day. It's the most scrutinized, best seafood in all of the United States, I guarantee it.
What's the one thing on your menu that thought would be like gangbusters and nobody orders it?
I'll tell you what, we've had some pretty good success selling a lot of our product. I mean, this is what I've done for our entire life. We surround ourselves with great, great folks. I think the big thing today is just misperception.
Okay, so tell me, what's on your menu that you know is good, but people go, I don't want that?
I think for people that are from out of town and they don't know truly what's happening, it's seafood in general. And that's just flat out not the case. Oysters, that's certainly one thing, but we're still harvesting great oysters. More than half the oyster beds are still open here across Louisiana. And so they're great. They're fresh. They're salty. They're briny. It's everything you'd want. Fin fish. We got fresh speckled trout, flounder, redfish, drum, sheep's head. I mean, all of it's right there.
What's the one thing on your menu that you thought would never sell? Mm-hmm. And you can't keep it because it just goes right off the menu.
You know, we've got a...
Why don't you think about that while I have another drink?
Yeah, go for it. I'll be honest with you. We've got really, really good positive feedback from all of our guests. I think, but once we finally say, hey, look, you know, try the seafood, people are just blown away by it. We have seen some of the folks that just can't be convinced, and they're going to order the chicken that day for lunch, so they're going to have filet mignon.
But, you know, there's seafood, and then there's seafood covered with so much stuff you don't even know it's fish.
Yeah.
So where do you find that middle ground?
Well, I think, you know, you educate the staff and you let them know exactly truly what's happening on a day-to-day basis.
But I'm talking about on a particular dish. Mm-hmm. You know, I see so much food that is covered with so much secret sauce,
you
lose the item itself.
Yeah, you know, we won the National Seafood Cook-Off amongst 15 different chefs last year, just about a year ago. And we won it with a obscure fish called sheep's head. And people are like, man, what's sheep's head? This doesn't even sound good. But it actually, it looks like a sheep. It's got a face like it. And it only eats crab and shellfish. It's the best tasting fish you've ever had in your life. So people
just don't look at it.
Well, yeah, it's a little funky, but we're not serving that in Commander's Palace, I can promise you.
All right, Dory McPhail of Commander's Palace. Drink up, buddy. That music means we are out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, I'm still drinking. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana, right after these messages.
Been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.